I hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I have to say that I certainly did. I spent it with my husband, my sisters, and their spouses in Nuevo Vallarta in Mexico at a beautiful resort. It was like being in Disneyland all day long, every day. We did not even pretend not to be tourists or that we were getting to know Mexico. It was pretend living. It was luxurious and fun. And yet, I was ever so aware of my privilege. In fact, that had that running in the background of my mind a lot of the time. On the other hand, the people who worked there at the resort, and there were many, were very pleasant and seemed genuine. I'm aware of the danger of saying that the workers were happy. The resort is a highly rated by outside agencies as a good place to work. Yet I know the workers have to appear to be something approaching joyous, or they could lose their jobs. Maybe even some or all of them were genuinely happy that people had come to share the beauty of their country and their resort. Or maybe they themselves are privileged and grateful for the comparatively pleasant jobs that the hospitality industry produces. Unlike some, they are able to house and feed their families and don't have to risk their lives crossing the northern border and all of that entails. You know, I'm still working on that understanding of privilege. What I did to counter that underlying guilt was to engage in a sense of gratitude, moment by moment. Just swimming in the pool, I would say thank you with every stroke. It became my mantra for the week, ever so appropriate for the season. And it was a genuine sensation. I believe not just me, but everyone in our small family group was genuinely appreciative and respectful. Unitarian Universalist minister Reverend Christine Robinson and her congregation member and co-author Alicia Hawkins have written a series of books on small group ministry. Gratitude is one of their topics. The authors say, "It has been said that religion is primarily an affair of gratitude. You may have always thought that religion is primarily an affair of believing. And if you were not sure how a person goes about believing, you may have thought you were not a religious person. Gratitude, on the other hand, is something that all of us can practice, and that makes us all religious." So during this season of Thanksgiving, I'd like to explore together how we can each cultivate and then possibly, hopefully, harvest our gratitude. I think doing this will be good for our spirits. To go deeper into gratitude and in preparation for this sermon, I listened to a few TED Talks, one by a widely read psychologist, Martin Seligman. During his talk, Dr. Seligman lamented his early working years, which he related as a time when he thought that by alleviating people's pain and misery, that they would then be happy as a result. But it didn't turn out that way. He was often successful in helping people and did, in fact, ease their pain. But instead of becoming happy, the therapy he provided would just get his patients to zero, to sort of a neutral state, neither sad nor happy. He reflected on this situation and conducted a significant amount of research. Then, in 1991, he began publishing books on optimism and the results of his scientific studies on happiness. Dr. Seligman talks about three kinds of happy lives. The first is the pursuit of pleasure, of positive emotions and pleasurable activities, like the ones we engaged in Mexico. The second is a life of engagement. He describes this as finding the flow of life, which manifests as a sense of timelessness, of total absorption in your work, love, and play. The third is a life of meaning. So there are a couple of problems with the first version of happiness. First is that in many cases, this kind of pleasure-based happiness is simply inherited. In that case, you may not be able to do much to change yourself and improve your state. So that's the second drawback. And the third is that people get used to feelings of pleasure very quickly. Think about your Thanksgiving pie. The first bite is like super yummy. But by the sixth bite, it's just kind of good, not great. And then you begin to wonder whether it was worth all the calories. The second kind of happiness is engaging in the flow of life. This could involve anything that you do that causes time to stop for you. I think about stories that I've heard of computer programmers or code writers who get so deeply buried in their work that they seem not to notice that they've missed meals or other biological needs. This can happen with any activity. You simply become aware, unaware, of the passage of time. Dr. Seligman has a website where you can, for free, take a test that will reveal your strengths and weaknesses. After you've taken that inventory, he recommends making life changes that fit your profile. He says the more you can manage to recreate your life in a way that enhances your strengths and minimizes your weaknesses, by restructuring your work, love, and play, the more you will be able to engage with the flow that increases your happiness. The third version of happiness builds on the second. If you can not only get into the flow, but do it in service of something greater than yourself, then you will be leading a life of meaning. And a life of meaning brings the longest lasting satisfaction. Dr. Seligman invites us to do some experimentation. So the first task is to design yourself a wonderful, beautiful day. Take a moment now to imagine what that might be from morning to night, to do the things that bring you great joy in life. And then find a way to act on that, to actually live it out, and to do it mindfully, savoring each moment. The next task is a little more elaborate. So let's try this now. I invite you to close your eyes and remember someone who did something that was enormously important to you. Someone who changed your life for the better. This person needs to be living. Okay, do you have someone? You can open your eyes. The next part of the task you'll have to do probably at home. Once you have the person in mind, Dr. Seligman says to write a 300-word essay focused on thanking them for changing your life. Specifically, he suggests that you put it in detail how they have helped you do that. But that's not all. Next, you should call the person on the phone and ask if you can come for a visit, but don't tell them why. And when you are together, you read the testimonial out loud to them. He assures us that weeping will ensue. When he tested this on people who did it, he followed them over a short period of time, a week, 2 weeks, a month. And both parties in that experiment were not only happier, they were less depressed. Here's something that he suggests for couples. Go on a strengths date. Remember that inventory I told you about? Find out you and your partner's strengths, and then design a date night to use those strengths together. See how that enhances your relationship. Finally, experiment with the difference between fun activities and a philanthropic one. Do something just for fun and see how long the feeling lasts. Then do something else. Do something to improve the life of someone else. The findings are that the fun activity, while enjoyable in the moment, has a pretty predictable drop-off rate. But if you do something to bring joy to another, the positive emotions just go on and on and on. So back to the resort in Mexico. They not only have a wellness program, but a joy program. The joy program invites you to participate in things that nurture your mind, body, and spirit. Connecting with others, especially loved ones. Strengthening your body through physical activity and nutrition. Strengthening your mind by learning and through the discipline of living in the here and now. It includes paying attention to your spirit by communing with nature and engaging in ritual. Finding serenity by meandering on the paths and listening to the music. Making peace with the world around you and preserving the local environment. Yet there is one important aspect that stood out to me. The programs of the Joy Squad is to help those in need. So a portion of the profits from this program are provided to a foundation that serves underprivileged children. So to increase your joy, you can both contribute to the foundation and visit the children. It's started by the people who created the resort. It's part of being a joyful person. So I have a theory that when we teach our children to say thank you, we're doing more than just asking them to be polite. Maybe we're actually opening them up to an important spiritual practice and a joyful life. You see, there's some debate about whether people are happy and grateful as a result, or is it that people are grateful and that leads to happiness? It's a question worth thinking about. Brother David Steindl-Rast is a Catholic Benedictine monk, notable for his involvement in interfaith dialogue. He says, "Want to be happy? Be grateful." He said that it is gratitude itself that makes us happy. Every day, life comes to us as a gift that we have not earned. We've done nothing to bring it about. It is a precious gift because we don't know at any moment whether or not it will continue. Each moment is a gift full of opportunity. The question is, will we rise to the opportunity or let it pass us by in the busyness of our daily lives? Will we see the challenges as an opportunity to learn life lessons and stand up for our values? Consider that these opportunities don't knock just once in a lifetime. No, they come over and over again in a continuous stream. Brother David has a simple way for us to build gratitude into our lives. He called it stop, look, go. Stop means slow down, pay attention. In other words, mindfulness. He encourages us to build stop signs into our lives. He lived in a place in Africa where there was no running water or electricity. When he got back to the States, he was delighted every time he turned on the faucet and clear running water flowed from it. He was giddy at the flick of a switch that turned the light on. But in a short period of time, he started to become habituated to these marvels. And so, to remind himself, he put post-it notes on the faucet and the light switches. Where would you stick post-it notes to remind yourself to stop for a refreshing pause of gratitude? Look is the second step. Open your senses to the richness of life. Breathe it in. Drink it in. Enjoy it. Then go. Life invites us in every moment into the next opportunity. Do whatever life offers you in that moment. And remember that nothing makes us happier than to do something for someone else. Act on that one. Reverend Christine Robinson adapted Psalm 34 to read like this. How do I know that God is good? By opening my heart in gratitude and praise for the gifts of life, by focusing on the astounding intricacies of the world, by attending to the still small voice of healing and renewal, which saves me in times of trouble, and by loving life and honoring that gift, speaking truth, doing good, seeking peace. When I serve the highest I know, I serve whatever God there is. The joy of this, no matter what my troubles, will keep me whole. A few years ago, I realized just how blessed a life I was enjoying. I was about to ask my husband what we should do when we have everything we need and more. But before I could ask him, the answer came to me. Be grateful and give back. Contribute. That feeling has only gotten stronger. I think of the people who have contributed over the years to build this church. Over 100 years worth of people giving and giving generously. Think of all the folks who gave to something larger than themselves and created lives of meaning and joy thereby, even during very challenging times. There are those who have gone before whom we can only thank in our hearts and in our minds. But there are those here among us today who have given over the years and in recent months. So I'd like us to take the opportunity now, in this moment, to feel and express our gratitude. So I'm going to call out a number of different roles you may have played in the life of this church. And if you identify with them, I'd like to invite you to rise and remain standing. So if you have ever served as board president, would you please rise? As vice president, secretary, clerk, if you've been a board member at all. If you have helped to find people to volunteer through leadership development. If you've been on the worship committee or been a worship associate or been on the Chalice Guild. If you have served on the sabbatical committee, been on the RE committee, been a teacher, a facilitator for children, youth, and adults, been on the Social Justice Council with its accessibility and inclusion, green team, immigration rights, LGBTQ, and racial justice teams. If you've been on music and arts committee, a performer, in the choir, an event producer, been on the audiovisual team, been on stewardship and finance, planned giving, building usage, office volunteer, facilities, membership, fellowship, ushers, pastoral care team, helped with the right relations of this church through Amicus or on the Committee on Ministry, been on personnel, human resources, staff and ministerial search teams, helped us stay connected to the larger UU world through district, regional, and UUA events. If you've sat in the pews and put money in the collection plate, you have helped build this church. Will you look around this room, please, and really show your appreciation to all the folks who have contributed. Thank you. Our new UUA president, Susan Frederick Gray, wrote, "In this season of gratitude, I am reminded that our faith and our congregations are not something that we own. They are a gift given to us by those who came before. They are a gift from those who saw the importance of religious community in the lives of family and children and people of all ages, who risked and sacrificed in service of a free faith committed to love and justice. Now it is our turn to take risks, to embrace the promise of our faith, and to understand our own role in living and giving to our faith in ways that ensure its future. Our mission calls us to build diverse and spiritually vital communities of love and resilience, and to be leaders working for a more just, equitable, and sustainable society for all. The best way I know how to honor and give thanks," she writes, "for those who came before us is to remember that in our own place, in nurturing the vitality, mission, and impact of this faith today, and for those who follow us. Thank you for all you do to help nurture Unitarian Universalism."